Disclaimer, I am a counseling student, I am not a mental health professional, and I cannot give or offer mental health services. You are listening to Good, You. I'm your host, Samantha, and today I sit down with Morgan Thomas, who is a licensed mental health counselor, and we're going to be discussing LGBTQIA plus allied therapy. And so what we talk about today is just what being an ally within this community looks like, and how we as therapists and me as a future therapist can be advocates for this community and for our clients. I really appreciate Morgan coming on and being very vulnerable and discussing what it's like for her to be within this community and be a therapist and what she thinks could be fixed within the mental health system to support our LGBTQIA plus clients. So if you want to follow Morgan Thomas, she is available at Morgan Thomas Coaching on Instagram. You can find her website, morgisthomascoaching.com. And she's also has her own podcast, and it's The Clinical Spiritualist. It's on both Apple Podcasts and Spotify. All of that is going to be located in the podcast notes. Again, thank you, Morgan. I hope y'all are all excited to listen and educate yourself within this episode. Happy Pride Month 2022. Let's get started. Okay, so hello, Morgan. It's so good to have you here.
Hi there. Thank you so much for having me.
Yes, you were one of the first people that I connected with on Instagram with the podcast page.
Yeah, I remember your Instagram having like just a few followers.
Yeah.
And it's grown a lot.
It's getting there. And it's really exciting whenever I see more people listening. I definitely love it. And Morgan has a podcast herself.
Yes, I do. It is The Clinical Spiritualist.
Yes, it is excellent. That's how we met. Mm-hmm. I was on one of her podcast episodes for a Reiki session.
Mm-hmm.
People say Reiki. I've heard it all.
Yeah, all the same.
Okay, good.
I'm from Indiana, so I say Reiki.
Okay. It's like I'm the South, so maybe that's what it is. Like,
yeah.
We'll just keep it that way.
Yeah.
Okay. So why don't you tell us about yourself and what you do?
Yeah. Awesome. So my name's Morgan Thomas. My pronouns are she, her. I am a private practice therapist based in Indianapolis, Indiana. And then I also own my own business where I do one-on-one coaching and then offer some spiritual services. I read tarot and do Reiki as well.
I love because not a lot of people know, but I also do tarot and I have my oracle cards. That's why I reached out. I was like, which oracle cards are you using, girl?
I love them.
Me too. And it definitely has helped me with my spiritual journey and crystals and everything, meditating and smudging and everything. So absolutely. Love that. Saw that, connected with that, loved that from the very beginning.
It's so good for your mental health, I feel like, too, like these little spiritual things to do.
Yeah. And we talked about I don't know if it was on your podcast or I can't remember, or it was after while we were talking how we both came from pretty religious families. Mm-hmm. And this helps us kind of connect to our spiritual side in a way. Like,
absolutely.
Yeah. So that's, I love that about this is that I feel connected in the way that fits me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
absolutely.
So what made you choose this line of work?
So I feel like everyone who is a therapist or becoming a therapist, they have a really like, you know, I had a therapist when I was 10 and I just knew I was going to be a therapist. And I don't have a story like that. I really became a therapist out of accident. I kind of just stumbled my way into this career. So I knew I needed to go to college. And I chose psychology as my major because I didn't know what else to choose. And then I got to undergrad and was like, oh, I really enjoy this. And I just kept hearing professors in my degree say, you know, you need to go to grad school. Basically, psychology degree is nothing. And so I applied to grad school, and I actually applied to be a school counselor and also the clinical mental health route. And I really didn't understand the difference. And I'm so, so thankful that I chose the clinical mental health route, because I would have not been happy as a school counselor. But I really chose counseling because my advisor in undergrad was like, hey, that's something that you could look into. I knew I wasn't ready to go get my PhD. I knew I could not commit to another 5 years of college. I was already kind of burning out. I was like, I know I can do 2 years, give it my best, and then get out of here.
Yeah.
So then I got to grad school and I was like, whoa, like this is where I belong. And it kind of just fell in place.
Yeah. I resonate with that. Going to take over my parents' restaurant though, which was totally day and night. And, I think just me going to therapy definitely made me realize, I think it was just becoming more self-aware and like realizing how big of a difference I made in my life that made me want to go down that route to help other people get there.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You stumbling on it means just as much as anyone planning for it for forever. Truly.
Yeah.
So today we're talking about LGBTQIA plus allied therapy. And can you explain what that means to be an ally as a therapist?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think at a just like a base level, having a knowledge of what it means to be LGBTQ plus or LGBTQIA plus, and really understanding and having a general, if not close to in-depth knowledge of each letter. It's not enough to know that gay people exist. It's not gay and straight anymore. It's not boy and girl anymore. Really having the knowledge that gender and sexuality are on a spectrum. And as therapists, it is our job to educate ourselves on that. And not only educate, but continuing education with this community. Grad school is not enough. And I really, so this will kind of probably play into our conversation today, but I didn't come out as queer or bisexual. I use those words interchangeably until a few years ago. So as an adult, and I did not have education about the queer community in grad school. You know, we kind of talked about it, but it wasn't in depth. And I brought up my own sexuality and coming out because I think I would have pushed harder on my grad school program if I would have been out and proud during that time. Mm-hmm. But I didn't come out until like after I graduated or toward the tail end of it. So to be allied, education is a huge piece. And I always tell people there's such a difference in acceptance versus affirming. So acceptance, you know, that's great to be accepting of the LGBTQ plus community as therapists, but acceptance says, yeah, you can be here. Like, I'm not going to hate you for it. Like, I'll work with you. That's okay. That's fine that you're LGBTQ plus. But to be affirming is like, as a therapist working with this community is, I am so happy that you are LGBTQ plus, and I'm so happy that you're here. It goes beyond acceptance and tolerance. Mm-hmm. And it really affirms that you are made and exactly as who you are. There's nothing we need to change. If anything, I want you to know yourself deeper. And not all therapists are LGBTQ plus allied.
Yeah. I think that having the cultural sensitivity classes that we have now, the multicultural counseling, that has definitely helped, but it definitely does stem towards more race and ethnicity versus LGBTQ. And we do touch on it, like you said, but it definitely could stand more education. And I was talking with my teacher and she had actually mentioned a conference coming up in a city near me. So I really want to go to that. I'm guessing it's going to be next month because next month is Pride Month.
Yay.
And, definitely need to be like, I like that you said that because I don't know if you've ever heard of Jane Elliott. Jane Elliott, created this exercise called the blue-eyed experience. You might've seen exercise. She doesn't call it an experiment. And it's really good. But she kind of deals with, putting people with blue eyes in a way that they're like the minority in the exercise. Mm-hmm. And what she talks about is, the difference between tolerating and accepting. And I love that you just brought up accepting to affirming because we are ever growing as a society and we need to keep growing. It's not, like you said, it's not good enough for just acceptance anymore. Like we need to be advocating, but yeah. So I think that that's the next step that therapists need to take. Mm-hmm. And I am really glad that they do have these courses now. And I'm sure they weren't available for a long time.
Yeah, absolutely.
So how can therapists, other than education and continued education, even like garnering experiences from people, how can they provide a positive experience for members within the LGBTQ plus community?
Yeah, I touch on this in a different question, but it also relates under this one. The most important thing that therapists can do is face your own biases. And I know that we do that. Well, I don't know if all grad programs are the same, but you know, we talk about biases towards race and religions and things like that, but really facing your biases towards the LGBTQ plus community. And instead of saying, oh, I'm not homophobic, I'm not transphobic. Well, that's okay. You don't have to be outright hateful to have biases. I grew up Christian, religious in a small town, and I grew up with homophobic beliefs. And it wasn't until I went to college and I unlearned all of that and I became, you know, accepting of the LGBTQ plus community. And that's one thing. And then it's like, then I had to become accepting of myself.
Yeah.
And, so facing your own biases is the most important thing that you can do, really sitting with yourself. How do you view gender? How do you think relationships should work? Do you think it is between, you know, a cisgender man and woman? Why? Like going back to your childhood and where you learned these things and really unlearning them and not feeling shame about them. It's okay that your first thought pattern is like, ooh, that makes me uncomfortable. Ooh, I'm not used to seeing someone who's non-binary. I'm used to seeing someone whose gender fits these really rigid roles. That's okay, you know, but what isn't okay is seeing that you're having these biases and not doing anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
Some other things that you can do to create a more positive experience, always asking for your client's pronouns, whether that's in your intake information, or you know, just confirming in your first session with them, hey, I'm Morgan, I'm going to be a therapist. My pronouns are she, her, what are your pronouns? It's just, I understand that it can be uncomfortable if I didn't grow up asking people's pronouns, but it, you know, our job is to make our clients feel comfortable. And if you feel uncomfortable, well, you know, figure that out so that you can know your client's pronouns. You need to have your pronouns displayed in your email. You need to have your pronouns displayed on your cards. You know, I created business cards and I forgot to put my pronouns on them. So the next time I'm going to make sure I put my pronouns. It's not about getting it 1,000% right.
Right.
Every time. It's about always understanding that there is room to grow and you don't know everything. Yes. Even if you're a part of the community, you don't know everything.
Yeah, that's actually a good point that you brought up because there's someone in my class that is part of the community, but doesn't know a lot about the trans part of the community. And, mm-hmm. and that's actually how that conference that's coming up got brought up because it's for people within the community and as well as outside, obviously, to go learn more about each area of that community. Mm-hmm. So that's why I was like, I'd love to be able to go to that. And I also mm-hmm. wanted to add something that we talked about was what's behind you. Like, let's say you're doing telehealth. What is behind you? Do you have a bookshelf that has, allied books for every aspect mm-hmm. of culture? And do you have paintings or anything that's going to be something that they look at too, that your clients mm-hmm. look at?
Absolutely. Yeah. That was literally the next thing I wanted to add is, like, you literally segued so nicely into that. Having a flag or a sticker that says this is a safe space with the pride flag on it, I know it sounds so simple, but I promise you it takes away so much anxiety to any of your clients who are in this community, because they automatically see that, whether it's on telehealth in your actual office, and say, okay, this space is safe. Because not all spaces are safe. And speaking as someone, a part of the community with a lot of privilege as a white person, seeing a flag where I walk, whether that's a restaurant, a therapist's office, even my own neighborhood, I saw a new house put up a pride flag, and I was like, oh, I feel just a little bit safer.
Yeah.
I feel a little bit more accepted. So that, it really does wonders.
Absolutely. Yes. Any way you can. And, you know, I even asked in class, like, what if you have a client that comes in that is not an ally of the LGBTQ community, and they bring up those things in your office or wherever you are. And my teacher said, well, I would just ask them, like, what made them bring that up? And it's just the way that mm-hmm. you segue into those questions with your clients that feel the need to say something. And it's like, that's such a great way to put it. Cause I feel like for me, I would have been like, well, why do you think, you know what I mean? Like, but to not be, what's the word? Confrontational in a negative way, in an aggressive way. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to understand how to go about that. But if anyone out there is wondering, cause I was, there's your mm-hmm. answer.
Yeah. That's definitely something to think about as therapists. Cause as therapists, we also have to remain unbiased, and, you know, people who maybe aren't accepting, like, we are going to see them as well. And I think it comes down to coming down to your core values as mm-hmm. a clinician. And, you know, they're really interchangeable, your core values as a therapist and as a person. You know, if you feel strongly about creating a safe space for all, then that having a flag isn't taking away from, you know, someone who doesn't accept at all.
Right. It's not very interesting putting them in harm's way, you know, like, mm-hmm. so if they don't like it, it's unfortunate, and they will just probably have to go somewhere else if they don't like it that much. And that it is what it is.
Might not be a good fit. Right. Yeah, exactly.
And honestly, if they're looking on Psychology Today or anything like that, they're going to see that you are LGBTQ plus allied anyway. So
absolutely. Yep.
And I also wanted to bring up what you were talking about in the beginning is it's a great point to give yourself grace in the fact that you're raised in a certain way of thinking. And if you're starting to understand, I might have this bias here, it's really difficult to understand if you're not open to giving yourself grace. Like mm-hmm. if you're not being okay with it, because then it's just going to come with a bunch of self-hate, self-guilt, self-shame, mm-hmm. and no one who the hell wants to go through that. And it's going to happen. You're still going to say, like, damn, I was like that for a while. And that sucks. And it does mm-hmm. suck, but that's the way the world is. And the best part is you're making the change. And that's what's important there.
Absolutely. I 100% agree with that.
Yeah. So let's talk about collective trauma and how has it affected members of the LGBTQ+ community?
Yeah. So collective trauma is a group of people experiencing the same type of trauma. So anytime I hear collective trauma now, I immediately think of COVID and the pandemic. I don't know how many times I heard, you know, and I probably was part of it, Instagram sick therapists say we're going through a collective trauma. We're going through a collective collective trauma. So it usually is like a worldly event, a political event that affects a group of people. Mm-hmm. So, you know, COVID was like the whole world. That was like a world collective trauma. Yeah. But you know, you can go with it smaller. Like if, you know, I can think of when I lived in Nashville, there was a tornado that destroyed a lot of people's homes. You know, that was a collective trauma for Nashville people.
Right.
So that is what a collective trauma is and how it's affected members of the LGBTQ plus community so many ways. Some examples I could think of is bans on trans people in sports. That's a collective trauma. You know, trans people or gender non-conforming people, they're going to feel that the most. But I think as just members of the LGBTQ plus community, we all kind of feel it when it's like a family, when anyone is threatened or harmed, even if it's not directly like, you know, I'm bisexual and I'm cisgender. So gender is not really, something that I face discrimination on, mm-hmm. but yet when I see my, you know, trans clients and trans, you know, community harmed, that affects me in some way because I'm, you know, with them. I don't know how else to describe that, but, you know, when people, LGBTQ plus people have faced hate crimes as collective or individually, I'm thinking about like the threat versus, of Roe v. Wade right now. And a lot of, you know, that's a collective trauma for LGBTQ plus people, not only because LGBTQ plus people also, you know, receive abortions, but, you know, if that's overturned, then we have to think about same gender marriage being overturned. And so, yeah, I've seen so many like creators, LGBTQ plus creators who are, you know, speaking out that this is making them, you know, nervous. And I cannot believe that gay marriage was illegal since I've been alive. That's like so hard to fathom. And I think it's a little bit harder to sit with because I grew up thinking I was straight. And so I never was in a same gender relationship. And so I never thought about it. Like I knew it was going on, but I didn't really give it much effort. But now that I'm in a same gender relationship and we've talked about marriage and long-term commitment, you know, that's a collective trauma. Like that hypervigilance that, you know, I just received an email before we got on here that, there's 25 states or something like that where LGBTQ plus people can be denied like food or, you know, access to restaurants or stores solely if the owners, you know, beliefs are like, Christian or conservative, they can like deny that you're allowed in there. And so it's just this hyper vigilance and hyper awareness that cisgender straight people don't experience. I know it's infuriating.
It is. It is. And, you know, learning about everything this past semester in multicultural, it's just, you want to sit there and fucking scream. Cause you're just like, what point is getting across that? What is the point of not letting someone eat at a restaurant?
Yeah.
And how un-Christian.
Yeah. It's always in the name of like love and God. And it's like, you're spewing hate.
Yeah. And let me say this because, I feel like I have been not on here, but, in general, just been more like talking more about just, I think it's because I feel like I have religious trauma. Right. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I've been talking down about it or people more realizing that's my bias. And, and I had someone in my program speak up about, how like sad it is because that's not how they are. Right. And I totally hear that. I was like, you know what? you're right. I'm doing the same thing that I'm calling out. And mm-hmm. so I understand. And we're not talking about everyone who's Catholic, everyone who's mm-hmm. Christian. Mm-hmm. It's specifically to people who practice in a hypocritical sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I agree with you. Not everyone who's Christian or reads the Bible is homophobic and transphobic. And I think this really comes back to your main question is what is collective trauma? You know, historically, Christianity has perpetuated homophobia. And it's not every single person, but it kind of reminds me of the argument of, towards sexual violence. It's not really helpful to say, well, not all men. We're talking about a collective here. It's a lot of men.
Right.
It's not every man, but, you have to have enough like ego strength. I don't know what the right word is to be like, I know that's not about me. You know, my sister and my mom, they're Christian and they're also allies of me and my relationship in the LGBTQ+ community. It's very nuanced, but absolutely. Yeah, it's not to spread hate on Christianity. It's just, you got to speak to the reality of the situation is that the church has made our community, LGBTQ+ community, feel unsafe and unwelcome. And if you are individually not like that, then that's great. You're part of the change.
Exactly. Exactly. And there is a more modern sense of practicing religion mm-hmm. that we could dive into. And it's like what you said with all men, like my husband didn't understand that for a while either. Like mm-hmm. if I hear a shitty story and I'm like, here we go. And uh-huh. he's like, well, like why all men, like blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, well, because I can't go down an alleyway with a man there and think this guy looks friendly. I have to always constantly be, well, I shouldn't be walking. I don't think anyone should be walking down an alley, but this is, you know, my point. I can't walk down my sidewalk by myself
right.
at 5 a.m. to go walk my dog and see a guy and feel comfortable without holding my pepper spray. Like,
yep.
And that's what it is. It's the fact that you always had to be on alert, just like with people in the BIPOC community, with police officers, mm-hmm. they can't mm-hmm. tell which cop is going to be racist or not.
Right.
And it's better to be guarded than not.
Absolutely. So
what advice would you give to therapists who want to learn more and be more culturally competent within this community?
So kind of what I was talking about earlier is facing your own biases head on, whether that's, you know, finding a safe friend, partner, family member, where you can be vulnerable and, you know, it wouldn't be appropriate to say in a whole group, you know, it just feels weird to see two women together. But you know, exploring that with a safe person or a therapist and being like, you know, it feels weird to see, I'll use an example, two women together.
That's a great point. I'm sorry. I want to touch on that.
Yeah.
Go explore your biases with your therapist. They are there for that. Mm-hmm. Very safe space to do so. I'm sorry. Continue.
Absolutely. Don't be sorry. Yeah. Yeah. I've definitely done that in my own therapist sessions where I'm like, I feel like it's better to be with because I'm bisexual. I feel like it's better to, well, let's do a sidebar. Bisexuality also includes non-binary people. But this example doesn't. I feel like it's better to be with a man than a woman. Like, I feel like I should be and just like deny that part of myself. And it's not because I actually want to feel that way. It's because, you know, my thought patterns and my brain patterns have been so distorted since I was a child. And I remember my therapist like was shocked to hear me say that. And I'm like, it's a thought I have. Yeah. Really exploring what I like to call your shadow self, the self you don't really show to everyone. We all have nasty thoughts, you know? And yeah, so facing your own biases head on Another important thing is start following LGBTQ plus therapists. Start following trans therapists, non-binary therapists, or just non-binary people, trans people. And something that I have found so helpful that I feel like I share a lot, start like, I don't know the right word, but I guess desensitizing yourself on your social media. Quit following everyone who has the same gender, sexuality, lifestyle as you. Start making yourself uncomfortable on your own social media, because soon enough, you're going to feel like that's comfortable. And do that in your own life too. You know, I just say it's kind of easier to do on social media sometimes.
Right.
And then also I think educating yourself, educating therapists, educating themselves on intersectionality. You know, not just following the white queer person, but also the Black queer person, the Black trans person, people with multiple identities, because a white queer person versus a person of color who's queer, they're going to have much different experiences. And obviously the white person with much more privilege. So just really diversifying who is coming into your feed, making sure that it's not all white, cisgender, straight therapists. And then this kind of comes up with the biases and reflecting, but reflect on your own sexuality and gender. And this doesn't mean that when you reflect, you're gonna be like, oh my gosh, I think I'm queer. But just really sitting with, okay, I'm cisgender. How do I know I'm cisgender? Have I ever questioned my gender? Have I ever questioned my sexuality? Have I ever been curious about it? Nothing bad can come with self-exploration and self-reflection. If anything, you're really going to know, hey, I know I'm not a part of this community, or hey, maybe I'm curious, you know, and curiosity doesn't equal being a part of the community, but really reflecting on what that what your own experience, so that you can have an even more level of empathy, like a more deep level of empathy for other people. So for me, like, I can understand exploring your queerness. I cannot understand or even fathom exploring your gender, or not feeling like the gender that society has given you. And so I have a deep level of empathy for trans and genderqueer and non-binary people, because it's just an experience I don't have. But if I try to put myself in their shoes, no, it's not going to be the same, but my empathy level can grow, because our society is just, it loves boxes and it loves traditional ways of being, and it doesn't like change. So those are some ways.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that if you look back, like, let's say, I mean, not even, it's still happening now, but if we're going to look back like 30 years ago, right, and how gay and lesbian were viewed, that's like how people are viewing transgender and genders in general right now. And it's always something, all new stuff, like you said, it's going to be something that's pushed against. And like, that's why it's our jobs as therapists to be allies and to advocate and to talk about it with our family members and our friends who might not know a lot about it. And that's why it's important that we educate ourselves.
So, And I wanted to add another thing. Language is so important, like really diving into language of this community. I just learned the other day what a, you know, not, it's not slang, but like learning what language is used within the LGBTQ plus community. Like I just, the other day I learned what TERF lesbian was, and it's, I guess, lesbians who aren't accepting of trans women who identify as lesbians. Someone said it and I was like,
I didn't know that.
In my, yeah. And so I researched it, I looked into it. And so if you hear a phrase in regard to this community that you don't know, look it up. And, you know, just constantly being not, I wouldn't say hypervigilant, but vigilant. Language is always changing. So making sure that you're up to date on, you know, what people are using and what's appropriate and what's not. Like, example, we aren't supposed to be saying homosexual anymore. It was a term that, you know, as you know, was in the DSM, and queerness used to be a mental health disorder. So homosexuality doesn't need to be used anymore. And if you use it and you say it, okay, it's not the worst thing in the world, but you know, just staying updated.
Right. And yeah, by the way, something I was going to bring up is that what she's saying, homosexuality was in the DSM-5, which we've talked about on here before. It's where we get our diagnosis information, and it was in there as a mental disorder, and wasn't taken out until I think it was 1972. So not that long ago, people. Okay.
Yeah.
Like that's why
it was really recent.
Yeah. That's why it's important to stay up to date with what's happening. Mm-hmm. Do you have any specific resources, like any books or movies that you can suggest for people to look into?
Yeah. So movies and shows, just literally going under the LGBTQ plus categories and watching shows. It goes back to that social media. If you're comfortable with anything of the community, getting yourself used to it, watching it, desensitizing yourself, getting comfortable with it, especially if you don't have queer or trans people in your life, watching it on a screen is so important. So just go find, I find that a lot of new shows and movies have at least one LGBTQ plus character, and it really does help diversify the scene. So, really reading anything, listening to anything that's from an LGBTQ plus person. It doesn't have to be a therapist, but it will help you as a therapist. The Trevor Project is a really great resource for LGBTQ plus youth. It has a lot of great resources on there for therapists. And then also a lot of articles, research, data about the mental health impacts on this community. We face an increased risk of suicide, depression, anxiety, mental health disorders, sexual violence. Bisexual people are at an increased risk of facing sexual violence than their LGBTQ plus counterparts. There's just so many statistics that are important to have at the back of your head. It doesn't mean you have to memorize it,
right?
But knowing that when you have a client come in that says, "Oh, I'm pansexual. Okay, here's what I know a little bit about pansexual people." And obviously we know with data, like, you can't just apply it to everyone, but if you want a holistic approach or cultural approach, having some facts just in the back of your mind is really important. And then following your local LGBTQ plus centers. So for me in Indianapolis, that's Indy Pride. I follow them on Instagram. I see what events they have going on. We need allies at these events. It's not, exclusive to if you are LGBTQ plus. We need allies there. And it's okay if you're not in the community. It's not like, oh, we don't want you here. No, we do want you here so that you can learn and grow alongside with us. And then when you're not in this saturated environment with all of us, you have this knowledge and this exposure where you can help spread safety in areas that maybe don't feel as culturally aware.
Yeah, definitely. Exactly. And that's why I really want to get together with some of my friends and go to the one at the city. I really got to look up the date. I know she said it was coming up. So that's why I'm assuming that it's coming up next month, but
right. Yeah. That'll be fun.
I know. And of course we have Pride in New Orleans, downtown. It gets awesome and crazy and fabulous. So I'm going to that as well.
Oh my gosh.
Are there any, are members of the LGBTQ community hesitant to seek mental health help? And if so, why?
Yeah, absolutely. So it kind of goes back to the beginning where we talked about not everyone is an ally, and therapists not saying anything is saying something.
Yeah.
So even if you aren't saying, "Oh, I'm anti-LGBTQ plus," if you're not saying you're allied, if you're not having the little, if you're not doing the work, I don't know how else to say that. People are going to be hesitant to come into your office. And then also going back to the religion, and again, disclaimer, this isn't everyone, but this is a collective situation. I've heard so many clients say, I've tried a therapist, but I was really uncomfortable because they had a Bible verse on their wall, and I didn't even want to tell them I was queer, and I never came back. I've heard that story so many times. And, you know, it doesn't mean that that therapist may not have been an ally, but you have to understand when putting something religious on your wall so that clients can see, LGBTQ plus people 9 times out of 10 are going to feel unsafe because of the historical context that that has. Yeah. So making sure that, you know, you aren't having religious stuff around, and, you know, not to say that LGBTQ plus people aren't religious. I'm just saying as a
whole. Or if you do have also allied stuff around, like,
right.
What if that quote was next to a flag or anything? Mm-hmm. That definitely would have made a difference.
Absolutely. Not saying that your ally is saying something. And so right now I'm in private practice and I have clients coming to me, and even with my coaching too, and they're seeking me out because I'm saying, first of all, I'm queer. Second of all, I'm an ally, and I'm putting that in a lot of places because not saying something is saying something.
Exactly. That's perfect. Perfectly worded.
I love it.
Can you talk about your experience as a therapist who's part of the LGBTQ plus community?
Yeah. So there's kind of two things that came to mind. So I started exploring my sexuality while in grad school to become a therapist. And I remember the first time I sat in front of my therapist and said, I want to talk about my sexuality. She didn't make a wince. She didn't make a wide eyed. She actually looked excited. And I don't know anything about this therapist. The therapist before that, she was queer. I don't know her exact identity, and engaged to a woman. And it was so weird how the universe works, but it was so weird. She was kind of like my preface to it. I admired her so much and I didn't know why, but now it all makes sense. But my therapist after that is when I actually started actively exploring. So I got on dating sites but Bumble, and changed it to all genders. And I remember feeling so much shame about that. And I needed someone to talk to about it. I wasn't ready to talk to friends or family. And I said, I'm ready to talk about my sexuality. And she said, okay, let's talk about it. And that smile and that one sentence literally, it felt like so much shame had been removed from me in that one session, because she was like, okay, let's go. And I don't know her beliefs. I don't know anything about her. But it just, your like affirmingness as a therapist will do years of healing. Absolutely. And then also I thought about, okay, that's actually two more things. So I'm looking at my notes. If you are LGBTQ plus and you're a therapist, if you feel comfortable, and I do it with my adult LGBTQ plus people. I worked with a lot of LGBTQ plus kids and I never disclosed it just because it's just different. But to my adult clients, I tell them that I'm bisexual or queer, and I notice that immediately makes a connection. And I always say, like, I don't know your experience, but I can relate in some sense. And I just, you know, want you to know that. And actually, my partner started going to therapy and her therapist is pansexual. And my partner's, she's lesbian. And she shared that she was pansexual, and immediately that created like a bond. And so I really think disclosure, I know it's kind of taboo. Therapists have different thoughts on it, but.
That's true. But I love a little self-disclosure. It can go such a long way.
Yeah. Yeah. It doesn't mean I give them my dating history and who I'm with and all that, but
exactly.
That one sentence can really create a safety, a connection. And then also when you asked me this question, my experience as a therapist, as part of this community, I thought about my first job post-grad was as a school-based therapist for a private practice, and I had so many kids on my caseload, and I would venture to say 80% of them were LGBTQ+.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome.
And our school that I worked at, this is something I really loved, had pride flags everywhere. I had pride flags all in my office. And so kids knew immediately when I sat down, I'm bisexual, I'm non-binary, I'm trans, this and that.
I love that.
It was amazing. It was
so refreshing.
Part. Yes. I was like, there was Black Lives Matter flags. Like, I've never seen that in a school before.
No, me neither.
But it was so healing for me to work with kids who knew who they were, because kids always know who they are. And if you have a kid come to you and say, I'm trans, I'm bisexual, I'm pansexual, whatever, believe them. You know, that may change, their label may change, you know, whatever, but they're on to something, and we need to start trusting kids that they know who they are. And this adult anxiety we have, even as therapists, where, you know, in my site that I worked at, I had a clinical supervisor who was not a good clinical supervisor, but we had a client that I was disclosing, and she's 13, and she came out as bisexual. She told me she's bisexual, and I was sharing that. And she's like, well, she doesn't know that, you know, she doesn't know what she's talking about. She's 13. Anyway, all that to say, kids know who they are, and we need to trust them and believe them as clinicians and go with them. And even if you aren't a part of the LGBTQ+ community, you can do so much by just saying, okay, is that important to you? Is that something you want to process?
Yeah.
And then also understanding that not all LGBTQ+ people are there to process their gender and sexuality. You know, that's not always everyone's barrier. Some people know who they are and they're ready to talk about their anxiety or, you know, their family relationships. It may have nothing to do with their sexuality and gender. I feel like I talked about 7 things there, but
no, I'm definitely on track.
Okay.
But I think it's important to let anyone explore, no matter their age, what harm comes with that, other than them learning more about themselves.
Yeah.
Just like an adult.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah. And exploration doesn't equal sexual exploration.
Exactly. Like what you were saying earlier with, if you wanted to go do that for yourself, it's the same thing. Like, just in the end, you garner more understanding of yourself and self-awareness and self-understanding. Same thing with the kids. Like, 13 is, listen, I thought I was a grown ass adult at 13. I don't know about you, but definitely.
Yes, I definitely did as well. Learned a lot since then, over a decade now.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. If only I could have a conversation with the younger me.
Yeah.
Feisty. Well, thank you so, so much for being on with me today. I'd love for you to be able to tell everyone where everyone can find you and listen to you.
Yeah. So my Instagram is Morgan Thomas Coaching, and that's also my website, where you can work with me. And then my podcast is The Clinical Spiritualist, and it's available on all platforms.
Yes. And I will definitely have that in the show notes. So definitely go follow Morgan. She's awesome. She has her oracle readings that she posts, or tarots, and you can, tip and get one every now and then, which I love. And yeah, just get updates on her podcast postings. So again, thank you so much. Yeah. Today's episode, I'm so glad I'm finally getting to, some type of allied community. So
thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Okay. Well, I'll see you later.
Okay. Bye.
Bye. Today's music was written and produced by Tyler O'Brien. You can find him on Instagram at Dreamscape, DreamScape, and follow his band at Wastelander_band on Instagram.